When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe it. USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Trade Radio, episode 531, coming to you on Monday, January 22nd. We're going to look at the latest in USC football news, including some transfer portal updates and so much more, including a discussion on sort of where the Trojans stand right now, how we feel about the Trojans in college football going into the 2024 season. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. Email address, reignoftroy@fanside.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227, Second Whisper and Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Reign of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Dertal.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back. Back on Mondays, Monday night podcasting. I'm excited because I feel like we're about to, you know, get in a spot where we have our off-season ritual sort of locked in, right? I hope. Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Mondays, weekly Mondays.
Yeah.
As we go through an off season that always feels endless until we inevitably get to March and then April and then May, and every month closer we get to the new season, we say, "Wow, it's already March, and wow, it's already April, and wow, it's already August, and can you believe how the time flied?"
How the time flew.
But in January, on January 22nd, the time feels like it is forever and a day away from the new season. So,
yeah. How the time flied.
The time flied. Yes.
Did you have to take a writing 140?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can tell.
No, I went to College Preparatory High School, Notre Dame, in Sherman Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, as a freshman in high school, learned the concept of a 5-paragraph essay. So when I got into writing 140, mm-hmm. I just looked around and was like, people like we're learning how to write a 5-paragraph essay?
Yeah.
Like what are
You just fly right through that course, right?
Like, what are we doing? It was very bizarre for me.
I got lucky. I tested out of 140.
You could test out of 140?
Well, I was a transfer student.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, no. I I didn't
see,
get
when you're as smart as me, like, you can just, you know, circumvent. I got to SC without ever taking the SAT or the ACT.
That's wild. That's the wild one to me. I never took the ACT. I took the SAT.
That's called smartness. Smart. I just flied right through it. Didn't have to worry about it.
Flied right by the SAT. Yeah,
exactly. 240 though. 240 was fun.
240 not so fun.
Yeah. 240. My final project. It was a presentation. Even though I was writing 240, but it was a presentation. And my presentation was why Matt Barkley should come back for his senior season.
I always forget this, and I love this about you. that you did a presentation on Matt Barkley.
Yeah.
For an actual college credit.
You know what the incredible part is? You want to know what some of my rationale, it was like a PowerPoint thing. Some of the points that I had didn't even age well, because I was like, he's gonna have great incoming freshman wide receivers like Jaden Mickens, because at the time Jaden Mickens was committed to SC and then ultimately he flipped to Washington, but he was going to SC at the time.
Yeah, well, this is why. Well, this is a great transition into the actual football talk. These famous instances are why the off season is all about counting your chickens before they hatch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we do all off season. We just count our Jaden Mickenses before they hatch. We count our George Farmers before they hatch.
Yeah.
We count our you know, Trey Madden being healthies before they hatch.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's,
and the off season just makes sure that it fly by. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Big shout out to the OHIO podcast. I hope it's OHIO.
OH.
The Ohio podcast.
I'm setting you up and you're failing.
Oh, sorry. Do it again.
OHIO.
Hey. Yeah, there we go. Let me be the first Buckeye to welcome you to the Big Ten. Maybe our pods can collaborate down the road. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the super chat from the OHIO
podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
And yes, we do need to do some collaborations with our new Big Ten buddies.
Yeah,
around the conference as we find them. So yeah,
I can't wait to write down the term conference rival Rutgers.
For me, it's conference rival Purdue. I just have a feeling about Purdue. Like, it's going to be Purdue.
Purdue's going to be
the new Oregon State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see it. West Lafayette and Corvallis have sort of the same vibes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. One of the things that helps about things like Rutgers is, at least in if you go to a Rutgers game, you can bet on DraftKings. It's a legal gambling state, and Trojan fans, DraftKings is offering fantastic signups for new users. You can place a $5 first bet on anything and instantly claim $200 in bonus bets. You'll also be rewarded with a separate no-sweat single-game parlay every single day when you opt in. The best part is that you'll receive both rewards if your first bet loses. So when you join DraftKings, make sure you use the sign-up code RAINOFTROY, all one word. Using that code, RAINOFTROY, not only gets you these great bonuses, but helps directly support this very podcast. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, and you live in New Jersey, maybe, make sure you sign up for the code RAINOFTROY on DraftKings to maximize your first bets and parlays. The offer, of course, only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states, like a lot of those Big Ten states. And please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Alicia, we got a bunch of stuff to get into. So let's get into the news, shall we?
When you need
need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Alicia, we got to start with the transfer portal updates. Romelu Heights, he's someone who had his moments, absolutely. Missed most of the 2021 season with an injury in 2023. Had his moments, had a big game against Utah and Arizona State. Ultimately, six tackles for loss on the season and four sacks. But he is headed into the transfer portal. The man from Auburn, 2 years at SC, now gone into the transfer portal.
Yeah, and it was sad for him because his first season, he got that injury. I think it was in the first game, might have been the second game of the season. And that sort of just, he never quite picked up. We imagined that he could be somebody that would fill some gaps on the edge, and just never really felt like it came to be. And you're right, he did have a few moments, but it was also pretty clear to me that in terms of the pecking order, he was behind guys like Jamil Muhammad. He was behind guys like Solomon Bird. And then with USC adding Anthony Lucas and, you know, Elijah Hughes and Braylon Shelby, it felt like he ended up in a little bit of a log jam that you sort of understand why he's heading out, striking out, see where he can finish out his career. So it's not a huge loss in terms of production, right? Maybe a loss in terms of having another veteran body in there, because USC is losing Solomon Bird to the draft. But it's one of those. I think it follows in line with most of the portal departures that USC has had so far this year. It's been really interesting looking around the rest of college football and seeing a lot of programs lose guys that they don't want to lose at all. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of pondering to myself about how USC's lost a lot of guys, but with the exception, I think, of Michael Jackson III, most of them I have had the reaction of like, okay, good luck elsewhere. That's fine.
I don't know. I sort of feel a different way here. I mean, you look at Romelu Heights, of all the rush ends last year, third in tackles for loss with six, behind Solomon Bird and Jamil Muhammad, who had 11 and 10 and a half respectively. But I always felt like Romelu Heights was close. And, you know, there's part of me that thinks, could he have been the guy to take the step forward in the Danton Lynn defense? Could he have been the guy to sort of, I know that we said there's no Leatu Latu on this defense right now, but could he have been one of the Murphy twins?
See, and to me, that's Jamil Muhammad. Like, I get where you're coming from with Romelu Heights, as it, maybe he could be. Maybe he could take that Chenna Nwosu step forward that we always dream of with the sort of redshirt senior upperclassman. But for me, that's Jamil Muhammad. And I think that the fact that it's Romelu Heights that's transferring out kind of is telling on that front about whether or not
that's valid. Yeah.
Like where they stood relative to everybody else. Because I mean, if we're going to make all of the comparisons, in a perfect world, Anthony Lucas is your Leatu Latu and Jamil Muhammad or maybe someone like Braylon Shelby or whatever is one of the Murphy twins, and
right.
and then you roll. I'm not necessarily gonna bet on the perfect world coming true because
yeah.
Leyatu Latu was that special, and I don't want to mm-hmm. necessarily put all that weight on Anthony Lucas. But
right.
if you look at anybody who has the sheer talent, I suppose, the sheer potential, that's definitely your guy. And it's not that Romelu Hyde didn't have the potential. It's just, I don't know. I didn't necessarily see enough from him to definitely say, if I had to pick one of the two was going to stay between Hyde and Muhammad, I would have picked Muhammad.
I would have taken Muhammad too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would have said,
well, that's fair too, because you can never have too many edge rushers. But also, right. when you're a redshirt senior and
mm-hmm.
your eligibility clock is ticking, well, like, do you really want to sit there and have to be in a right. in a scenario at USC where it's like, well, maybe you'll maybe see playing time?
Yeah, we also know that SC got Nate Clifton from Vandy. He's someone who has talked extensively in his interviews and during the recruiting process that he can play all over the field, on the defensive line at least. Sort of any of those spots. He can play inside, he can play outside, he can play the edge. So maybe he factors in as another guy to maybe be there and sort of, you know, provide another body for Romelu Hyde to compete against, and at that point it's maybe better off to go find a different opportunity. I don't know.
Yeah.
Either way, we'll see what happens to Romelu Hyde. Good luck to him going forward. We'll see how that all goes. Let's talk about quarterbacks. Five-star 2024 quarterback, Julian Sayin, a Alabama signee and early enrollee, has been linked to USC, but he is committed to transfer to Ohio State.
Yeah, this one was interesting because in light of USC losing Malachi Nelson, in light of rumors of maybe Juju Lewis's commitment for, well, now of 2025, now that he's reclassified, his commitment maybe not being the firmest thing in the world. The link to Julian Sayin, who was one of the star quarterbacks in this recruiting class, it was interesting because it would have been a really nice insurance policy for USC against a potential Juju Lewis flip. But the moment he entered the portal looking to leave Alabama, Ohio State was the name everybody was saying.
Yeah.
It felt like USC was a, if not Ohio State, then USC situation. And it turned out to be Ohio State. So, well, now, given the Big Ten of it all,
mm-hmm.
when USC loses somebody to Ohio State, now that's one where we sit back and say, well, USC may end up seeing him down the line, and
yeah.
the consequences of that could be great, or USC could figure their own stuff out at quarterback. It's
yeah.
the thing about even pursuing Julian Sayin is that if you get the transfer of Julian Sayin, you are pretty much signaling to Juju Lewis,
mm-hmm.
go ahead and flip to Georgia. So balancing out these sort of quarterback questions, I think, is really, really tricky. And we've seen that from the USC perspective already this year.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get more tricky.
Yeah. You're saying he's saying,
I'm just saying,
yeah. The thing about quarterbacks, we talk about this all the time, is that it's all fluid. It
yes.
is all fluid there. Do not get attached to a quarterback.
No,
never do it. Just don't. It's the one position that's the most likely to always go in and out. Think about all the quarterbacks that you were, you know, Jackson Dart, the Trojan of the future, for like a month and a half.
Yeah.
And then this guy named Caleb Williams came in. Yeah. So, we will see what happens there. It is interesting, like you said, that it's going to be a weird process to mentally change who USC's conference foes are, because we've talked about it before. If USC loses a guy from Bosco to Clemson like DJ, who cares? You're never going to face him. Don't have to worry about it. Not that who cares, obviously you want those kind of guys, but like at least you don't have to worry about facing those guys during the season, right? Well, now you can take Ohio State off that list. You can take Michigan off that list, Penn State off that list. The list goes on and on of all the Big Ten schools. And the weird thing is, we talked about it with Dorian Singer last week, going in the transfer portal, transferring to Utah. Utah's no longer a destination that you have to worry about, which is weird. It's a weird instance that you have to recalibrate your brain.
Flipping that switch.
Yeah. Let's talk about other news in the transfer portal. Arizona, no longer... Speaking of, why are we talking about Arizona? They have nothing to do with USC anymore. Noah Fifita and Tedaroya McMillan are staying in Tucson. They're not following Jed Fish to Washington. They had a big ceremony over the weekend where, like, all of their players recommitted to staying in Arizona, and then they also like had a big win over UCLA in basketball.
Which is why we're talking about it, because Noah Fifita and Tetaroya McMillan are no longer USC's problem.
Mm-hmm.
The moment Jed Fish left Arizona, there was a question of, well, does McMillan want to come over to USC? Mm-hmm. That was a question. So there was a connection there.
Yeah.
But the real danger in my mind was those guys following Jed Fish to Washington. And that has not happened. In fact, much of Arizona, this is the funny thing, is that if you have core guys who decide to stay,
yeah,
it creates a wave of momentum. And I think that has happened for Arizona, the wave of momentum led by Fifita and McMillan to stay in Tucson, to commit to playing for the Wildcats and to leaving Jed Fish out to dry, because, you know, how dare head coaches take new jobs. But them going to Washington would have been an issue for USC, because USC actually does have to pay attention to what Washington does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Washington being absolutely gutted is ultimately, from a USC perspective, a plus, because USC's schedule is difficult enough, and not having to necessarily worry about a quickly rebuilt Washington is one less thing that the 2024 Trojans at least need to care about. So
yeah,
that's kind of big news on the Jed Fish front.
Yeah, if there's anything, any guy who can sort of make over for a gutted roster, it's a Fish, though, right? Jed Fish.
Well, he can. That's the thing, is he can make over a gutted roster. To not trying to play off your pun, but trying to actually analyze this.
Sure.
But he needed time at Arizona, and he might end up needing time at Washington, because he's not able, because the vibes around Washington and Arizona are so weird.
It's still crazy to me. Two weeks ago from this moment, we were thinking that Washington was going to go win a national championship.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't, but yeah.
Now here we are. They've literally lost like everybody off their two deep. They have a new coach who I think is pretty good. I like Jed Fish a lot as a coach, but it's a whole completely different situation for them. So
Washington was already losing everybody, and then they lost everybody else.
Yeah. One of those guys is Parker Brailsford, the starting center for the Huskies, has committed to Alabama. He's going to go follow Kalen DeBoer to Tuscaloosa. He was someone that you mentioned on last week's episode as, wouldn't it be cool if SC could sort of get in there, but it always kind of felt like he was going to go follow Kalen DeBoer and go with the Tide.
Yeah, I was literally considering USC's need at center. I was hoping that maybe USC could get involved there. It always felt like a bit of a pipe dream, considering the fact that Alabama also really needs a center. And the first call that Kalen DeBoer should have made was to the center he left at Washington. So this is not a surprise. It's just a little bit of a bummer. And also, it's going to be part of the theme of this episode of where does USC go from here? Where is USC positioned going into this season? Actually, that center question, that would have been a really easy answer to the center question. Instead, the center question looms.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens on the offensive line. We know that Jonah Monheim is coming back, which is a good thing, but still got to figure it out. Still got to see if there's another guy that SC can sort of get in the transfer portal, or if they have to solve those things internally with all the recruits. We know that SC has recruited the offensive line heavily last couple of years, but there's not a lot of, say, blue chip guys in that room at the moment. So we'll see. We'll see what happens on the offensive line. Let's go and talk about the NFL. Alicia, it is guaranteed, barring some sort of injury, I guess. Knock on wood, that doesn't happen. But there will be a USC Trojan in the Super Bowl. Amon-Ra St. Brown is in the NFC Championship game, and he will face Sam Darnold, who is probably not going to play. Amon-Ra, over the weekend, had a touchdown. He led the Lions with 77 yards on 8 catches. Would have been nuts if he had 77 catches, but yeah, 77 yards on 8 catches and a score in their win over the Bucks. And Sam Darnold just held the clipboard about as admirably as you could have wanted, which of course guarantees that SC will have a NFC representative in the Super Bowl, because it will be Lions and Niners. The Lions going on the road to Santa Clara to face the Lions this week.
Yeah, I think the Lions are one of the best stories in the NFL this year, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is one of the players that make them go. And it's been really, really fun to see him in the NFL reach his full potential, and mm-hmm. I think step closer and closer every day to proving himself as a top five receiver in the league. And he's doing everything that he could have dreamed of. So yeah, not Pro Bowler, but All Pro. So whatever. He's got the Lions in a good position, and I think they're going to be competitive against the Niners, who sadly, as Kenny in the chat points out, don't have Talanoa Hufanga playing for them on their defense right now. He sadly mm-hmm. suffered a season-ending ACL injury a couple months ago, which is a big bummer, because that would have been really fun to see Amon-Ra and Hufanga go
two guys
against each other.
Who, you know, we always knew that they were damn good players, Hufanga and Amon-Ra, but were just not valued in the NFL draft situation because they don't have elite speed, they don't have necessary elite size, but both of those guys, extremely cerebral players who are extremely bright and play well and are technically sound and all those things, and they've been, you know, masterful in the NFL so far. So in Hufanga and Amon-Ra, awesome for Amon-Ra to get the chance to go to the Super Bowl if he can, he and the Lions can win at Levi's this upcoming week. But bummer for Hufanga not being able there. And as Kenny says in the chat, Lions have to be America's team at this point. Yes, easily. It's anybody but the Chiefs. Anybody but the Chiefs.
I really like the Chiefs, and I find myself rooting for the Chiefs more often than not.
The Yankees too? Or...
I cover them so much that
you
I'm just
like
in the
so.
Middle of it. I am. They do wear red, and I do tend towards... It's just, this is sacrilege for me as technically a Chargers fan, but also the Chargers make my life not happy, and the Chiefs are fun, so whatever. I don't really care. I don't have a team. But for me, the best story would be the Lions winning it all.
Yeah.
That would be easily the best story. Then again, I have a good friend who's a 49ers fan who I don't want to see him have to go through sadness. So I wouldn't mind the Niners winning. I think that the Aguilar getting a ring with the Ravens.
Well, this is the other thing. On the AFC side, no, there is no Chief Trojan right now. Juju Smith-Schuster no longer in Kansas City, but there is Nelson Aguilar with the Ravens. He had a touchdown, 12 yards on 2 catches in their Texans. Texans, Titans, close enough. Sort of shared a city at one point. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see if Aguilar can get to the Super Bowl with the Ravens. The Ravens look awfully damn good at the moment, so we'll see. We'll see how it all comes together. All right, Alicia, here we are. We wanted to have a discussion going into the season. How are you feeling? How are you feeling about USC right now? We made the little thumbnail here on YouTube. Has USC rebuilt enough? What do you think? How are you feeling at this moment going into the 2024 season with what Lincoln Riley and his staff have been able to do so far in the early part of the offseason.
I'm very torn. And I can't be the only one who's kind of torn. Like, I feel like USC has made the right hires in terms of the defensive staff. I'm extremely excited about the defensive staff from top to bottom. They've added the right kinds of players in terms of, you know, getting the defensive linemen that they needed in Isaiah Rikes and in rebuilding the secondary with the safeties from Oregon State and UCLA. You know, getting guys like Akili Arnold and Kamari Ramsey feel like game changers for USC at safety. There's so many guys that I'm very, very excited about, but it feels like USC is still a few short. And I think that's where I'm not sure if I should feel confident yet that this has been fixed.
Can I counterpoint you?
Okay.
I would say, how many off seasons have we seen where SC goes into the off season and gets all the dudes? They get the recruiting class that's the number whatever recruiting class. Think of the 2014 recruiting class or whatever. Think of the transfer portal gets that they got maybe last year, where you're talking about the big names and all that stuff. Because you look at the names that SC has brought in the transfer portal, I think there's a lot of really interesting guys that I think that absolutely can be helpful, like you said. You know, the guys from Oregon State, I think, are going to be fascinating to see how they fit in. And the guys that Nathan Lennon brought over from UCLA are going to be fascinating to see how they fit in. What's Jaden Maiava and Miller Moss, I think that whoever wins that job will more than likely have proven to be a pretty decent quarterback option. Like, yeah, like I think that there's absolutely pieces here and all that stuff, but you're right in that there's not a headliner. There's not a headliner big ticket guy that SC has brought in. There's not a Dorian Singer. There's not a Jordan Addison. There's not a Caleb Williams here. But where I push back is, like, how many times has SC gone out and put together a coaching staff that you feel good about in that same way? And on top of that, like, SC always has the talent to compete, even if they, yeah, the guys on this roster don't compare to the 2008 defense. Certainly. Yeah, obviously. But I'm almost okay. Like, it's weirdly refreshing that SC went out and valued development and valued coaching staff and put all their resources there rather than just talent for once. And so, yeah, like I'm with you that there's no big ticket guy, but we've talked about it before. SC has played many a team that had way less talent than them who outcoached them, especially on defense. And so there's still more than enough talent for USC to get plenty out of if they even sniff the coaching ability that SC has sort of wanted to see when you look at guys at schools like Oregon State and Utah and Arizona over the last couple of years. If SC can coach how they have, especially on defense, there's enough dudes here. I think that they can, if the coaching works, they can get plenty out of this.
Well, and I think that's why I'm so uneasy, because I have put faith in coaching staffs before. I thought that the Alex Grinch coaching staff that they brought in from Oklahoma was going to be fine at USC. I accepted that they might not be elite, but I thought they would be fine. And they, in the poetic words of West Texas Mike, we were made to sit in Alex Grinch's diarrhea last season.
But how many times were we sitting here and saying, well, like, yeah, Alex Grinch, you know, yeah, maybe wasn't perfect at Oklahoma, but like he had so many good, but this, but that or whatever about coaching staff hires and whatnot. what is the yeah but about any of this coaching staff that they haven't necessarily, like...
There's only one, there's one big yeah but, and it's at the top, and it's not a yeah but that I believe. It's the yeah but of Danton Lynn turned UCLA's defense around.
In one season, yes.
Without a staff that he picked and with right. NFL talent rushing the passer.
Yeah, but now he's got a Super Bowl winner and a national champion coach.
I mean, that's underneath him. That's why I feel like every bit of pessimism that I might have on the defensive side of the ball is... I can very easily answer the question on the optimistic side about Danton Lynn being too well respected coming out of the Ravens organization to just be the one season wonder that Kenny references in the chat as like the fear, right?
Yeah.
Every assistant that they have hired from the outside is way overqualified for the job that they're doing at USC now.
Yes. When have you ever seen that? This is a school that makes, you know, Kennedy Pola the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Yeah. That promotes Rocky Seto to be the defensive coordinator. That goes out and makes Nick Holt the defensive coordinator. And you end up with people 15 years later crediting Nick Holt with the defense of 2008.
Yes.
Like, you know, this is, you know, we talked about it last week with Henderson and how Henderson's the assistant head coach or whatever the co-defensive,
co-defensive coordinator,
whatever the title is for pay. SC is the master of that. Like, forever has been, like, how many times was Clay Helton the offensive coordinator under Lane Kiffin, but he wasn't? You know what I mean? Or under Sark, but he wasn't? Same sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I think that's the reason for optimism on the defensive side of the ball. But I'm also scarred, and I think a lot of USC fans are scarred by the defenses that we've had to watch over the last certainly couple of years. I would argue the defenses since Pete Carroll left have been more questionable than good. Most years.
But this is the weird thing is, at the time, I thought that 2005 defense was garbage.
Yeah.
I talked about it for so long that, like, people want to talk about the 2005 USC team, and I'm like, no, 2004 was better. 2004 was better. Because you had all of the offense, but they were just 1 year younger. But then you also had four All-Americans on defense. You had Mike Patterson. You had Grudegood. You had Sean Cody. You had all these guys on defense that you didn't have in 2005. When 2005, you had guys like Ashton and Oscar Lua, and you had young Dallas Sartz, and you had freshman Cushing and Ray get out there who probably shouldn't have been on the field at the time. Like, it was the 2005 defense. I look back now in 2024, that 2005 defense, probably better than SC has had in the last decade.
Since Pete Carroll left. I mean, the 2013 defense was legitimately could get the job done.
Right.
The 2016 defense could legitimately get the job done. The 2017 defense could legitimately get the job done. And aside from that, most of those defenses were middling to the few years of absolute trash that we've had to go through.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess my question is, we talked about like someone like Talanoa Hufanga, where we have seen USC have a Sua Cravens, a Talanoa Hufanga, a guy that is clearly All-American level, even if he doesn't get those, you know, honors at those levels because of the circumstances around him. And I wonder who on this incoming defense is that guy. Now, I love Easton Mascarenhas-Arnold. I love Akili Arnold, Kamari Ramsey. These guys are, I think, very capable of coming in. John Humphrey being very good players on USC's defense. But are they, is there a Leatu Latu in this group? Is there? I hope there is. I have to believe that Danton Lynn is identifying players that he thinks can succeed in his system.
Here's a question. Do you need a Leatu Latu?
Well, it helps to have one.
Well, no, yes, obviously, but like, what I'm saying is, do you literally need a guy to lead the country in tackles for loss?
It would go a long way. Do you need that?
Would.
No.
It certainly would, but no. Like, I think there's the chance that you could like replace him by committee, which is another reason of why I think that Romello Height, I think, absolutely would have worked there, is because, yes, maybe you don't have, you know, the one guy, but like, we talked about Romello Height, right? And I was looking at the numbers just now at USC tackles for loss. I know so many of these numbers are deceiving because SC was all world in tackles for loss for the first month of the season and then were terrible after that. But Solomon Bird and Jamil Muhammad combined for 21.5 tackles for loss. If you include Romello Height, that's 27.5 tackles for loss among three guys. Well, three guys. Just divide that by two, and you assume that those are just two of your edge rushers. You're now at two guys who have 13 apiece. That's not what Latu had, because he had like 20 something or whatever it was. But like, it's you're getting closer, right? Like I think that you can get there with a group of dudes, even if you don't have that one big star.
It's also the transition of the Big Ten.
Sure.
How did those players fare going up against beefier offensive fronts? You sort of just assume across the board in the Big Ten. Right. I think it's going to be a challenge, but USC does have Bear Alexander.
The other thing really quick here is that Leatu Latu had 20, I looked it up, 21.5 tackles for loss. The Murphy twins combined though had 25. So you not only do you need a Latu, but you need the Murphy twins like we talked about.
But then again, and this is just me arguing with myself, like UCLA had all of those players the year before and their defense was bad. So, you know, it's all in how you in who's pulling the strings there, and Danton Lynn clearly understands how to pull the strings.
Sure.
If nothing else, then in an in-game scenario, I think he was calling games well as a defensive coordinator, which is not something that we've seen from a USC defensive coordinator in what feels like forever. So I'll give him that. To talk about the offensive side of the ball, I think this is where the offense is where my anxieties are a little bit more focused. There are two positions that I worry greatly about. I don't worry about running back because
me neither.
Because I like Quentin Joyner and Amarian Peterson, and because I think that we have seen now USC plug and play transfer running backs 2 years in a row to extremely great effect. So I'm just gonna sit here and assume that Jacquavius Marks is gonna be fine.
I have a crazier take. It's not crazy, but like a more I don't care about running backs, period. You will find a running back. Your running game has so much.
We've seen the Lincoln Riley system. For as much as people like to focus on the air raid.
This is what the game is now. Like, you will find a running back.
If you have a system that can have a successful running game, it's because your system dictates that, as opposed to you need the, like, you don't need.
I care about the offensive line more than the running back itself.
Yes. So I'm not worried about running back. I'm not worried about wide receiver or tight end because, A, USC has now a bunch of tight ends to work with that I like. From the recruiting class, for Lake McCree coming back, all of that. And at wide receiver, I'm in a sort of similar vein of, like, USC has the dudes there already. And they've added an intriguing guy in Jaden Richardson, who I'm curious to see him transition from the FCS level. So, like, all of those positions, I'm cool with. I think USC has playmakers. I think USC has a system that can get the most out of those playmakers. All of that kind of stuff. I'm not even stressing the offensive line as a whole all that much because Jonah Monheim's back. And so, as I said when we talked about him going back, at worst, USC has a left tackle that they can rely on.
So where's your stressful point at?
USC doesn't have a center.
That's still the offensive line.
No, I don't have said the offensive line as a whole. Okay. I've said my anxieties about USC's offense are very focused on two specific positions. Center, who I, like right now, neither you nor I, nor anyone in our chat can tell us who USC's center will be in 2024. I can muse about how maybe Jonah Monheim does a job for USC there.
Yeah.
I can muse about how
Daniel says Elijah Page looked good.
Yeah, Elijah Page, and Elijah Page looked good on the offensive line, and so like I think he can come in and be a tackle for sure.
Well, this is one of those things too. If like, there's always the argument: do you put your best offensive lineman at left tackle, or do you put them at center? Like, regardless of like whose body type works for what, and whose footwork works for what. Like, there's a belief that like you might want to just have your best guy at center. You might just want to have your best guy at left tackle. Okay,
is Jonah Monheim coming back for another season of eligibility, spurning the NFL to play center? I don't know. Like, I would imagine that he's coming back to play guard, to play his natural position, to put film on the table for the NFL to be a guard. Is he coming back to play center for USC? I don't know. I mean, I think it's entirely possible. For right now, it feels like the best option. But if that's your best option, then like, well, then I don't. Then I then
if you master center, are you hurting yourself in the NFL? I don't think so. Like, because even if the NFL team wants to put you at guard, like that's not a crazy transition, right? Like, I think it's way less so than, say, guard to tackle.
I mean, maybe, but again, if the whole point of coming back is to put stuff on tape, having a year where Jonah Monheim proves he can play center wouldn't hurt him in that sense, but it wouldn't allow him to get the guard stuff on tape. So I don't know. Is there going to be a center good enough out there in the transfer portal to come in? Certainly not right now. So at the very least, you're not going to have them there for spring ball. At that point, you're rolling the dice on them being ready to go with just one fall, which we've already had a whole bajillion discussions about how relying on a transfer offensive lineman is always going to be a bit of a crapshoot. I don't know what the solution here is. I really don't. And I'm not saying that I think that they can't, like, I think they will figure it out. But there's a difference between figuring out at like the level where USC has an offensive line that just doesn't get worse than it was this year. Mm-hmm. And there's a level of figuring it out to the degree where USC can take a step forward offensively, despite losing Caleb Williams at quarterback, understanding that you will be taking no offense to Miller Moss or Jane Maiava, but you will be taking a step back at quarterback this coming season, no matter what, because Caleb Williams will not be your quarterback.
Right.
And so it becomes even more important that your offensive line is settled and dealt with. And I think that the offensive line will, my suspicion is that the recruiting that USC has done has been solid enough on the offensive line. We've liked what we've seen from guys like Alani Noah and Elijah Page in small instances that we've gotten to see them. And you have to expect that this offseason will be their chance to take those step forward and step into starting roles and prove that they can be capable of playing at USC and creating a stable base for USC at offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
But is that enough to get USC through a Big Ten schedule where the offensive line is going to be challenged physically more often?
Right.
And get USC through a Big Ten schedule where winning those battles in the trenches are basically how you get through all this whole thing, and can you do that if you don't have a very clear and solid answer at center? So that's my anxiety is if USC doesn't have a clear and solid answer at center, or doesn't have a very clear and solid backup plan at center, because by the way, let's say Jonah Monheim's my center, lock that in. Cool, move forward with that. Jonah Monheim gets injured on the first drive of the season. What do you do then? Because is it then Killian O'Connor? I don't know. I have no idea. Like, this is, I don't think we know a two deep at center, let alone can imagine a three deep at center. It's a big, big question mark for me going into spring ball, to say the least.
Yeah.
And then there's the question at quarterback.
Yeah. Well, look at last year. SC had Gino Quinones go down earlier on in the season. You didn't have a backup center. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's all valid. I would go off the other thing to throw in here is that we talked about it this past season, that one of the reasons that SC might have failed with the offensive line rebuilding through the transfer portal last year was that they relied too many on external guys, too much on external guys to come in and work. When you look at guys like, you know, Tarquin and
Pregnon
and Kingston, and all those guys. And
who, by the way, Pregnon coming back is
super
is,
helpful.
Is pretty big. Him being a younger offensive line transfer is very, very helpful, because that's one guard spot that I think theoretically you just
pretty solid, right? Yeah, but like we had talked about it before, like, maybe you can bring in one transfer on the offensive line because chemistry is so important that you want chemistry and system is so important that, like, it takes so much longer to develop these guys that you can't necessarily have three. Well, maybe SC is in a position to where they're not going to have that many offensive linemen from the outside because we haven't seen SC go out and get guys fillers.
I mean the lack of activity on the offensive line for USC is maybe
which means everybody
maybe I'm putting way too much faith in the coaching staff now, so like check me if you need to, listeners, but
sure,
the fact that they haven't even paying attention now.
Like, the answer of who's going to start in week one against LSU is anyone that was here before.
Yes.
Or it was the incoming freshman.
In the current recruiting class, which, right. Like we've said, USC has recruited the offensive line very ably over the two seasons that the staff has had a chance to recruit that position in terms of just adding bodies. And the fact that they haven't even, because that's the thing, is maybe you swing and miss at some offensive linemen that are out there that you want to come in and be starters. But the fact that they haven't even gone on plan B or C or anybody, like, there are offensive linemen out there that if they need, if they felt that they needed bodies, we would see those guys committing to USC.
Sure.
That's not been the case, which tells me that they must like,
they might feel the good about where they're
that they have, which I kind of get it because, like you said, it didn't work with the transfers this past season as the stopgap, at least not as well as they hoped.
So that's more of an aversion to plug and play transfers more so than a full on belief in what you have, right?
Well, it might be full on belief in what they have.
It could be a combination of both of them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This is the big question, right?
Yeah. Mentioned Gino Quinones right there. Look at the USC roster online, USCTrojans.com. Do you know what his major is?
Gino Quinones?
Yes.
Communications.
Geodesign. And I'm like, that sounds cool. Is that like GeoGuessr? I don't know. What do you think geodesign is? I looked this up, and do you know anything about geodesign?
Geodesign. No, I can do context clues.
Okay, tell me your context clue guess. Context
clues. Maybe it has to do with, like, city planning or that kind of thing.
Okay, I'm gonna read you what it says on Wikipedia, and then I need you to explain this to me.
Okay.
Geodesign is a set of concepts and methods used to involve all stakeholders in various professions in collaboratively designing and realizing the optimal solution for spatial challenges in the built and natural environments, utilizing all available techniques and data in an integrated process.
Holy word salad, Batman.
What?
Dan in the chat says geodesign is just civil engineering with better marketing. That So I'm sort of on the right track with city planning or like, you know, it's probably the concept of like designing, designing sort of the interplay between all of the elements of a city that, or a space, not just a city, but like a, like
sure.
urban design or I don't know.
So I see GISgeography.com says geodesign is the field of study that combines geography with design. Thanks. Thanks for that. Cool. Yeah. All right.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, that's where we are. We'll have this discussion more as we go in the off season about where USC stands going into the Big 12, the Big 10, the Big 18, the Big 18,
the Big 18,
yeah, the Big 18. Yeah, I said it on last week's podcast. I will say it again. I think there's a little bit too much. Yes, I think USC's schedule this upcoming season is going to be very difficult. But I think there's a little bit too much pearl clutching going on when it comes to the horror of how scary the Big Ten is going to be. SC just played in the best conference in America in the last calendar year. The Pac-12 was incredible last year. Seriously, it was. And this idea of like, oh, SC hasn't played against big tough teams. Have you seen Utah before? Like you're gonna tell me that Utah doesn't play as physical of a demanding game as say Wisconsin does? Like, mm-hmm. you know, SC has played teams like this before. It's not like this is not a gigantic change of pace that has to be as scary as it sounds. I think that it will be a difficult schedule going forward, but I don't think it's like they're not suddenly playing NFL teams.
My thing on all of this is USC, the program historically has played its biggest games against the Big Ten historically, the Big Ten's sure. best games. And USC, when they have well-coached teams that make it to the Rose Bowl, often win the Rose Bowl against the Big Ten's best teams because USC teams that are coached well,
yeah,
that are drilled well, that are technically built well, can do just fine against the quote-unquote right. more physical teams. USC struggles not because they're not physical enough, but because they're not coached well enough.
Yeah, when they, yeah, when 100%.
You mistake yeah. USC's not physical with USC's not coached very well.
Yeah.
In the trenches.
I will say it a million times over. I think the word physical, like physicality, when people talk about physicality, yeah. they're talking about playing well.
Yeah.
Like I know that sounds silly, but like
yeah.
so much of it, like who's going to win? Well, whoever's yeah. more physical today. In other words, whoever's having more success.
Yeah.
Whoever is winning one-on-one battles.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because player is better than the other. Because one player is...
Is yes, is, like
yeah.
whoever is more successful will win. Yeah, yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, yeah. correct. Yeah. All right. Let's go to the mailbag and then wrap this thing up, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right. Let's start with a message we got from let's say SJ on the YouTube. Alicia, what is more disappointing for you, the Chargers or USC basketball?
Neither, because I don't put faith in either of those teams. I am dead inside fully with both of those teams. Yeah. if you are disappointed by USC basketball this year, it's because you made the mistake of expecting anything from USC basketball this year. And you can use the injuries as an excuse all you want, but also without the injuries... actually, the injuries, this is my hot take, the injuries are benefiting Andy Enfield more than anybody, because I don't think this USC team would have actually achieved very much, and he gets to blame the injuries, and that's really, really convenient, because USC's record wouldn't be all that spectacular either way. Yeah.
The USC basketball has been a big dud on the men's side and a big boon on the women's side. The USC women look incredible. absolutely incredible. Juju Watkins is like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Since Juju Smith-Schuster,
yeah. We got a question from Roman Murdy. How far ahead of the current Big Ten teams is our offense?
Can I jump in here real quick?
Sure.
I tried to answer this question and I didn't come away with a good answer.
Okay, so I looked up some statistics really quick.
Okay, no, well, the answer being, I tried to look up what Lincoln Riley's record against Big Ten teams is in his career at Oklahoma at USC, and he's played one Big Ten team, mm-hmm. and that was Ohio State, and they got the win. Didn't put up much offense, but they did get the win. So it's very hard to say. But I would imagine that USC's offense is something that most of those Big Ten teams, like everyone talks about how USC has to worry about those Big Ten teams and their physicality and hard-nosed football and all that kind of stuff. Like those teams have to worry about USC's offensive ability as well going the other way.
Yeah. So the 2023 Ohio State Buckeyes led the Big Ten in yards per play with 6.38. For context, they led the Big Ten, but that was also the worst Ohio State offense in 8 years. Or 7 years, since 2016. Where do you think they would have ranked in the Pac-12 by yards per play?
Fifth?
Sixth. So Ohio State in yards per play, 6.38. They would have been behind Oregon at 7.82. USC at 7.39. Washington, 7.04. Arizona, 7.76. Oregon State, 6.45. They would have been sixth ahead of Washington State, which is at 5.94. So I will say that, like, I think that we don't know how far ahead USC's offense is when you're in a transition at quarterback and you don't know necessarily who your quarterback's going to be and don't know how the offensive line is going to shake out and all that stuff. I think it's going to be a question mark there. However, I think if we just go chalk, let's just say Miller Moss wins we're just going to go with the offense that basically played in the Holiday Bowl. Just assume that that's somewhat about where the offense is, mm-hmm. just for the lack of argument's sake here, of making it complicated. If that's the team that goes and plays in the Big Ten next year, the only teams that I think have a scarier offense off the top of my head is, yeah, Ohio State's ability. I think their ceiling is certainly way higher.
Yeah, Ryan Day can coach an offense.
They should be better than they were last year,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
They should be better than they were last year.
If the quarterback, if the Will Howard thing hits,
yeah, they should be better. But other than that, I don't think that there is an obvious answer of anyone that's better other than Oregon. And this is why, like I said last week on the pod, I think Oregon is easily the Big Ten favorite going into the season. Like, the only argument that it's not Oregon is if you're putting all your faith in Ohio State to rebound and fix their problems from this past year. Which maybe you will. They only lost a game last year, right? Like maybe, yeah, maybe they will. But like, yeah.
I'm looking through SP Plus rankings, SP Plus offense. The reason I like SP Plus is it's opponent adjusted. So sure. It's the closest you're going to get to accounting for different sort of cultures in conferences, right?
Mm-hmm.
The offensive numbers are not inspiring for the Big Ten.
Yeah. Well, even you look at Michigan's offense. Michigan's offense is 12th. Pretty good.
Of the elite.
Sure.
Like, the reason Michigan wins the national title is because their defense was incredible and their offense was good enough to match that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the difference for Ohio State is their defense was really good, but their offense wasn't quite at that step they needed.
You put that offense in the Pac-12 this past season.
Yeah.
That's like the fourth best offense, maybe mm-hmm. the fifth best offense at best.
Yeah. Oh, for Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it just is like it, mm-hmm. that's how it works. So yeah, I think the, USC will be just fine on offense, absolutely, compared to everybody else. It's going to be how they are defensively. What does help is that we'll have to play a lot of teams who are, like, we talk about the offenses are not nearly as good in the Big Ten. That should help USC's defense. It should help.
The big question for USC's offense, there are two major questions for USC's offense in 2024. It's Michigan and Penn State, because those are elite defenses. Penn State is going to have a new defensive coordinator, some questions about how they sort of manage that turnover. Mm-hmm. And then Michigan has the obvious questions of their in rebuild mode, in terms of just they just lose a lot of guys. Like they were a veteran late in team that won the national title.
Yeah.
They will lose a lot of guys. They have a very strong program that's been built up for a while, so I think they'll be able to plug.
They should be able to reload. Well.
Yeah. I think you don't expect them to take a huge step back, but maybe not have the number one defense in the country, hopefully. But the question for Lincoln Riley is, how does his offense stand up against Michigan and Penn State? The rest of them,
mm-hmm.
I think he should be looking to roll through everybody.
I think everything. Yeah. Yeah. I think the offense will be just fine against the vast majority of the teams on the schedule.
Yeah.
It's going to be how they fare against Michigan and Ohio State that you're going to be ultimately judged.
Yeah.
Luckily SC only gets one of those, and it's in September. And there's a lot of time
to recover from that.
If that one doesn't go so
day after my birthday. So that'll be fun.
You know what that means?
USC has a bad habit of losing on the weekend of my birthday.
Just saying. Jeez. Pessimistic Elisa in full force, huh? All right. Dan says, will you drive to Irvine to watch USC baseball? I love the Container Store. I won't drive to Irvine for the Container Store, so no. I refuse to drive to Irvine for anything.
I wasn't driving to USC for USC baseball, so yeah. Sorry.
Touche. All right, let's get to a couple of questions we got over on Discord. A little more off-topic-y stuff. LA Fred, what is something that surprises you, given all the advanced technology in the world, that is not a thing yet?
So many things. Why is it not a thing yet that my printer can communicate with any of the devices that I need printed and reliably print what I need it to print? That's the thing that I don't understand, why this technology is so difficult. I have headphones that can sense when I put them in my ear and automatically connect to all of the devices that I want it to connect to in the matter of a second. But the damn printer, if you try to connect and print stuff, no can do. You are asking too much. Explain this to me.
I feel like printers have gotten worse. My dad just called me yesterday and was like, the printer is only printing in red ink. I don't know how to... And I'm to the point now where I'm like, man, I am in a post-printer world. I am all for going to Kinko's and just printing my stuff if I need to get something there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've
never been happier with a printer than I was in college when I had a printer that literally just plugged into my computer.
Oh, yeah. That was the last time
I liked my printer.
I used to work retail. I worked at Office Depot, so I was always fascinated with printers. So, like, I bought a laser printer, little laser printer, brother laser printer, very simple. Only printed black and white. That was the best printer I've ever had.
Yeah.
Because it was great for printing schoolwork. And then I'd get the fancy laser paper, and then people would be like, your paper is so nice. Oh,
that OD life.
Yeah, that was me. I can't think of anything else. Advanced technology that not a thing yet. I can't think. Like, I'm just constantly amazed at everything.
Why is it not a thing yet that my windshield wipers can't automatically? This might just be my car is not new enough. My windshield wipers can't automatically detect that it needs to be wiped. Does anyone have windshield wipers that automatically know that it needs to wipe the windshield?
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. I hear you. I think that's a possibility. Is it that much of a great need? I don't know.
No, but
I don't know. Elliot Fred
says that they turn on automatically now. So
Yeah, look, there's a bunch of my car does that. Well, in the chat.
I'm giving away the year of our car.
Our car is old.
It's 2015.
Here's the biggest frustration about our car situation.
Yeah,
we used to be a two car household. We've gone down to a one car household because we work from home.
Yeah,
but you put your seat in the grandma position, and I don't.
I am 5'4", sir. It's not grandma position. It is 5'4" position.
The point is, the one annoying part about that car is you have to like crank the seat up and down. It's not an old car.
What
it's just
we
a
need,
Mazda.
So what we need.
Like, we need the cars.
What we
that
need
have
is
the
car that does the automatic, based on whose fob is getting into the car. It does the automatic.
Yes.
Stuff.
Yeah. By the way, big shout out, super chat to to West Texas Mike, who said thank you for saying Alex Grinch's diarrhea on the pod.
Yeah, you're welcome. Made me laugh.
Yeah. Ellie Fred says, "What is something that you do that is self-taught?" These are great questions should have good answers to, and.
My first thought was like crocheting, but does it count as self-taught if like my mom got me into it when I was a teenager? Because like she showed me how to do it, but also I ended up like self-teaching myself like a lot, most of what I was ended up doing with crocheting. So that feels like something that is self-taught.
I am going to go with
so podcasting is self-taught. We're self-taught podcasters.
I think the podcasting stuff, a lot of it is self-taught. Yeah.
Editing. You definitely self-taught yourself editing.
Yeah. I mean, I watched a bunch of YouTube videos.
Right,
sure.
That's self-taught. But like,
is that self-taught?
Yeah.
I feel like that takes away. I wouldn't say podcasting stuff. Also, like, neither of us went to broadcasting school or anything like that. And
this
I think that
true.
we're pretty good at speaking on the pod. I think that counts as self-taught.
Yeah.
LA Fred says, guests are coming over for dinner. What's on your menu? What do you got?
This
means what are we good at cooking for people?
Mac and cheese.
So one of the things that I feel like I have truly mastered is the burrito bowl.
Yeah, you.
I make burrito bowls for lunch that I think are much better than Chipotle at this point. And I am so happy about it. Like, I love them so much. I have... you know, really started to spice my beans and my chicken different and stuff like that. Like everything has come together very solidly and I feel good about that. But like, that's not something that you give somebody when they come over. I think the thing that I would make people if they were coming over tomorrow for like some nice dinner, it's probably a chicken divan. My mom's chicken divan recipe.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had to make a meal from scratch, it would be chicken and white wine sauce with rice and like a side of pick your veggie mix here, the kind that comes in steamer bags.
Yeah. Is there something that you wish you knew how to cook well?
Because
I got one.
I don't want this to come well. Okay, no, number one, and this is my goal for this year, one of my goals for this year is by the time Thanksgiving rolls around, I want to have perfected a
mac and
from
cheese.
Scratch mac and cheese recipe to bring to Thanksgiving, because that's the one thing my family doesn't do for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I want to do, so that is one thing
AKA
I want to
your family's white,
but yeah. But here's the thing. That question is more about, like, there are things that I wish I had a good recipe to, but I'm a very confident baker and cook, and if I have a recipe, I know I can execute a thing. I'm very good at following a recipe. So
great baker.
So the issue is less like, is there something I want? I wish I knew how to make. It's never that, because if you gave me a recipe, I know I could make it. The hard part is finding a good recipe.
Sure. You say you're a good baker. What do you like to bake? Sorry, I shouldn't ask. That's an inside joke for people who watch TikTok. One of the things that I wish I was good at making, but it, so I've been making like different kind of potato stuff. So like I'll make like home fries or whatever, and I've been able to make those or like stuff like that. But in the air fryer, I want to make a good battered potato strip. That like one of the things like I love fish and chips, right? Like if I can make like fish and chips at home that are restaurant quality, oh, it would be the greatest thing of all time. But there's just so much effort that goes into it. You got to have the deep fryer or whatever, and like,
well, yeah, a lot of that is also equipment because
yeah,
the problem with frying anything at home is just that, like, who actually has a deep fryer that can...
Right, yeah. You know. And, like, I love just a bag of, like, Orida potato strips, but, like, it's not that, like, even the oven ones or the air fryer ones are good. Like, it would be cool. It'd be cool if you could just, like, properly make those at home. But a lot of effort. A lot of effort, I think, for sure. Trinise says, assume that you've settled down for a nice game of battle shots. Since you both have some strong food preferences, what are you putting on your board? Trinise, I'm so sorry. I'm going to sound like the absolute lamest lame-o of all time. We put this on the rundown, and I asked Alicia, what's battle shots? I have... You tried
are the
to
only
explain
person
it to me,
who doesn't
and,
know this.
And
okay,
I'm like...
Okay, here. Do you know the game Battleship?
Love Battleship.
Okay. Take a battleship board.
Okay.
Exactly as Battleship is.
Okay. So there's a divider and you can't see.
Yes. And there's
each
spots.
Other's.
There's like, it's probably like 12 spots.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Instead of pegs that you put in your ships, like mm-hmm. your destroyer and
sure.
your all that kind of stuff, you have four shot glasses. And each of those shot glasses goes in a spot like where you would put your destroyer, where you would put mm-hmm. your this.
Sure.
And then we would play a game of battleship where I would say, I'm going to take a shot at B3.
Sure.
And you will say miss. Or if your shot glass is there, you say hit and then you take the shot. So the question that Trinise is asking is, if we had to, in my case, you know, like,
wait, are like, you picking the shots for the other person?
I don't know. That's the thing is in my imagination, I would pick the four shots that I have. But if I'm picking them for you, then that's very different. And if you're picking that for me, then that's very different. Mm-hmm. And also, this game feels like a good way for me to literally die. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
I would do... one shot of Fireball.
Ooh, yes.
One shot of...
Don't say Jameson.
No. Jameson is staying very, very, very far away from this conversation. I would do a Snickers shot.
Okay.
Which is like, it's like amaretto and something else. Yeah. I would do a Cactus Cooler shot, which is... something, but it doesn't. It tastes like Cactus Cooler. I don't remember what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lemon drop. Yeah.
Okay. That is good. Anything that's just a straight up shot that is not Fireball.
Yeah.
Tastes like paint thinner. You're lying to yourself if you don't do it. Like Jameson. Oh my God. What are we like? Straight up freaking paint thinner. Horrible. Absolutely horrible experience to do any sort of shots. I would say lemon drop. Have you ever had a Tootsie Roll shot?
Yeah, I do a Tootsie Roll shot.
Those are yeah. good. Yeah. And Fireball and yeah. Bill in the chat says, does the iconic French dip place still exist in downtown LA?
Philippe's.
Which one? Philippe's or
I
Kohl's?
I heard there's a big debate. I've only ever been to Philippe's.
You've never been to Kohl's?
Never been to Kohl's.
I went to a speakeasy that's like in Kohl's or next to Kohl's or whatever, but I've never been to Kohl's, like literally. Specifically Kohl's.
Okay.
Philippe's is absolutely bussing.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Big bussing.
Bussing.
For sure. Bussing. It's bussing. Yeah.
Bussing.
Absolutely. Sagar in the chat says, Michael, the single best fish and chips you'll ever have is at Water Grill. Blue Water Grill? You mean Blue Water Grill?
What are the best fish and chips you've had? I've been with you when you've declared that something was the best fish and chips you've ever had, but I don't remember
so
where it was.
Can I tell you the type of fish and chips that I like? I like things nice and beer battered to where, like, it's got some thickness on the batter where you bite into it and it's like, it's got that soft little goo inside, but it's crunchy on the outside. And then a super flaky, moist fish inside. Ooh. Ooh. Some of the best fish and chips I've ever had, Patrick Malloy's in Hermosa Beach.
Aged salt is really good.
You like McDonald's for burgers, too? Like, comparatively, come on. Here.
Yeah.
Aged salt is great. It's fine. I love Long John Silver's, too. But it's not the same thing. Not quite the same thing. We had great fish and chips on our honeymoon in Canada. At
what was it called?
Prince Rupert.
That's
Prince right. Rupert, British Columbia.
Yes.
That stuff was
the most
absolutely hitting. So I like, yeah, a very big piece of fish that is very beer battered. And then for the potato strips, I love a thick, like your classic steak cut are always great. I like a thick piece of fish, thick piece of potato. That's what I want. Absolutely. But
and I like shoestring.
Yeah. Your family likes the hood in the valley, which is always funny.
Robin
because
Hood, yeah.
Yes, because when your family's like, oh, have you ever been to the hood before? I'm like, I'm aware of the hood. Yes. LAUSD kid right here. Yes. I'm aware. Yeah. And they're like, they have great fish and chips. I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, Robin Hood. Okay. All right.
Robin Hood. Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, this will wrap up the pod. We'll be back next Monday. To talk more USC football and so much more. As always, send us your emails, RainerTroyFanside.com. You know how to reach us otherwise in that phone number, 818-643-7227 as well. So until then, we will see ya. See ya.
See ya.
See ya, Jesse.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.